Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
All right. Well, welcome back. We are covering the ratification debates. And what that means is that we're diving into the terms and definitions of the Constitution. There is probably no more powerful messages regarding the limitations of the Constitution and what it all means than the ratification debates. And we're in the Pennsylvania ratification debates talking or actually reading the words of Mr. Wilson. Now, before I get started, let me just say this, that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And this is the only show that gets into the facts. The facts are within these ratification debates. And by reading them, you don't take my word for it. You're going to hear Mr. Wilson, Mr. Madison, Mr. Iredell, Mr. Nicholas. There's just a whole bunch of men that are testifying to the limitations, and they're all singing the same song, that the federal government has enumerated powers only, and they cannot exercise any power that is outside of that. Now, just because they're exercising power doesn't mean that they're doing it with or in compliance to the Constitution. What they're doing is they're violating the Constitution, and they're violating it so much that they don't recognize any boundaries anymore. That's why we're in this pickle that we're in. If you want to fix it, you have to get involved. You have to start supporting Republic Review and demanding compliance to the Constitution. The Constitution is the solution. Now, if you can't stream this show all day today, then what you want to do is you want to just dial up and put your earbud in and listen to this show by dialing 605-562-4209. The other number is 605-313-0599. Now, I'm here to tell you that if you want to get involved, if you believe that there's something that needs to be done before it's too late, because we're rapidly getting to that point of where it's too late, then one of the things you can do is, well, you can support this show financially. That'd be great. We would be honored and humbled with your support. One way you can support us is by buying Red State Coffee. As you know, just go to reclaimingtherepublic.org. And it'll give you the link to the Red State Coffee sales site on eBay. I would also ask, if you want to donate and contribute, we also have a social, or I should say crowdfunding, out on GoFundMe. And you can get to that link with our link on reclaimingtherepublic.org as well. It's right, both of these links are on the homepage, to the coffee and to GoFundMe. If you want to really be a leader, if you really want to get involved, this is where we need you. We need you to stand up in the states and start leading. We need leaders to actually start stating the obvious. Hey, folks, it's time we stand up before it's too late. And so one of the ways you can also get involved, that probably the least way you can get involved, is by getting other people to listen to the show. Get other people to tune in and just say, hey, why don't you give this show a chance? This person, GR, he actually goes through the source documents. He's going to read them. He gets into them. And he also gets into a constitutional perspective on the news. Who cares what's really in the news if it's outside of the context of the Constitution? Like I said, we constantly see these supposedly, quote unquote, air quotes, I should say, conservatives, and I picked on Liz Cheney, so I might as well pick on Liz Cheney again, by her stating that, you know, hey, we're not in line with our socialist brethren. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean that they are socialists, or they're just not aligned with their brand of socialism? Because clearly, the federal government is a socialistic government. It's created all sorts of, nationalized all sorts of things. Labor, it's nationalized healthcare, it's nationalized welfare. It has nationalized most anything and everything. And so what we need to do is we need to get them back into compliance, and that's where we need your help. So if you like Red State Coffee, give us a call at 425-270-5416. That's 425-270-5416. That's also the comment line. Just, you know, if you want to make a comment, if you want to make a complaint. But again, like I said, if it's a personal complaint, we don't care. Not that we don't care, but we don't care. Anyway, I will also plug Constitution Day. We're rapidly approaching that point in time where Constitution Day will be among us. We're coming up on, well, we're under 2 months and on our way to just being over a month. And so we're going to be focusing on that as we get closer and closer. So please look at trying to create a promotion for Constitution Day. It is still not too late to go and reach out to a dealer and say, hey, why don't you do a promotion for Constitution Week? Why don't you give away constitutions? That would be great. We'll plug it here for you. And so who knows? You might actually begin to become a constitutional crusader in your local community. That'd be a great way of doing it. Anyway, we're trying to get into the content, so let me just lean right forward and get into what Mr. Wilson said. And so this is a new comment that he made, an argument in the ratification debates, and so I'll just jump in, and he says this. When I made the observation that some politicians would say the supreme power was lodged in our state constitutions, I did not suspect the honorable gentleman from Westmoreland, which more specifically was Mr. Findley, was included in that description. But I find myself disappointed, for I imagined his opposition would arise from another consideration. His position is that the supreme power resides in the states as governments, and mine is that it resides in the people as the fountain of government. Now, see, they're both kind of saying the exact same thing. And what I want to say here, because Mr. Wilson really pounds this, we the people, we the people, we the people. But they weren't a democracy, and too many people instantly transfer this concept of we the people into a democratic form of government. Get it straight, folks. It's a Republican form of government, and these people have delegated powers to the states, as Mr. Findley has basically asserted. They're both right. They're absolutely both right. The fact that Mr. Wilson is trying to differentiate on the minute detail, I think he went a little too far or went overboard. But that's not for me to say. The point is that everything he is saying is not creating this picture at all or in any sense that the federal government is unlimited. And he goes on and says that the people have not, that the people meant not, and that the people ought not to be part with it, to part with it to any government whatsoever. He's talking about their sovereignty. And in their hands, it remains secure, their sovereignty. What is sovereignty? It is the ultimate say on what government can do and what it can't do. They can delegate it in such proportions to such bodies on such terms and under such limitations as they think proper. I agree with the members in opposition that there cannot be two sovereign powers on the same subject. And that's actually a kind of a critical point, because when you start talking about the that would be the improper context of Congress. But when you talk about the dual nature of Congress from the House of Representatives to the Senate, one can clearly see that there are two separate sovereigns. There is the state sovereignty as well as the sovereignty of the people. And he goes on and says, I consider the people of the United States as forming one great community, and I consider the people of the different states as forming communities, again, on a lesser scale. From this great division of the people into distinct communities, it will be found necessary that different proportions of legislative power should be given to the governments according to the nature, number, and magnitude of their objects. Unless the people are considered in these two views, we shall never be able to understand the principle on which this system was constructed. I view the states as made for the people as well as by them, and not the people as made for the states. The people, therefore, have a right whilst enjoying the undeniable powers of society from either the general government or state governments in whatever manner they please, or to accommodate them to one another, and by this means preserve them all. This, I say, is the inherent and unalienable right of the people, and as an illustration of it, I beg to read a few words from the Declaration of Independence made by the representatives of the United States and recognized by the whole Union. And then he goes into the Declaration of Independence, you know, that we have a right to, you know, put off our governments and so forth. I'm not going to read that since we've kind of gone through the Declaration of Independence. But if you want to read the details on that and what he was saying and how he puts it into context, then by all means, you can go to reclaimingtherepublic.org and get links to, actually it's on Mobius Strip Press, you can get the links to these very specific locations where you can find the ratification debates. And with that, we will be right back after this. Thank you so much. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobius Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobius Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
And as such, we're in the midst of going through the ratification debates. My focus today and my focus this week and the upcoming shows is on the debates, or I should say the ratification debates of the Constitution in the different states. Excuse me. And the reason why this is important, I say this all the time, if the Constitution is a contract, which it is, it's irrefutable, Article 7 proves that. And how does Article 7 prove that the Constitution is a contract? Well, it required ratification. what does the word ratification mean? It's the formal acceptance of a compact, contract, or treaty. And in this particular case, because we have multiple parties, it's a compact. And to be very clear, it also states in Article 7 who those parties are, or who the stakeholders are of the compact. That's the states. It's pretty clear, folks. The states, you know, for right, wrong, or indifferent, were the authors in writing this Constitution. The Constitution was written for and by the states. And in doing so, they agreed to create a limited and defined general government. And in these ratification debates, that's exactly what they keep on stating. They say it in all different ways, and they clarify how limited the powers are. So, as we plow forward, today it's a little bit about state sovereignty with Mr. Wilson, because it seems like he just keeps on going round and round and round with his fellow brethren in the in the debates regarding sovereignty. And is, as he states in this particular address, he says, state sovereignty, as it is called, is far from being able to support its weight. Nothing less than the authority of the people could either support it or give it efficacy. I cannot pass over this subject without noticing the different conduct pursued by the late Federal Convention, and that observed by the convention which framed the Constitution of Pennsylvania. On that occasion, you find an attempt made to deprive the people of this right, so lately and so expressly asserted in the Declaration of Independence. We are told in the preamble to the Declaration of Rights and frame of the government that we do, by virtue of the authority vested in us, ordain, declare, and establish the following Declaration of Rights and frame government to be the Constitution of this Commonwealth, and to remain in force therein mattered, except in such articles as shall hereafter on experience be found to require improvement, and which shall be by the same authority of the people, fairly delegated as this frame of government directs. And so he goes on and says, and an honorable, and that was quoting there, right? So he was quoting from the Declaration of Rights in the preamble of their Constitution. An honorable gentleman, Mr. Chambers, was well warranted in saying that all that could be done was done to cut off the people from the right of amending, for it cannot be amended by any other mode than that which it directs. Then any number more than one-third may control any number less than two-thirds. And so that right there, they're kind of pointing out in this current Constitution, is the magical number. The number of one-third, which is 13 states. Actually, it's a little greater. 13 is greater than that because it's 12.3. Anyway, 3. Anywho, the whole point is that 13 states can dictate to the other 20 or to the other 37 states that they're not going to accept a constitution. They're not going to accept the changes to the Constitution or an amendment to the Constitution, is what I meant to say. Mr. Wilson goes on and says, but I return to my general reasoning. My position is, sir, that in this country, Pennsylvania, the supreme, absolute, and uncontrollable power resides in the people at large, and that they have vested certain proportions of this power in the state governments, but that the fee simple continues, resides, and remains with the body of the people. Under the practical influence of this great truth, we are now sitting and deliberating, and under its operation, we can sit as calmly and deliberate as coolly in order to change a constitution as a legislature can sit and deliberate under the power of a constitution in order to alter or amend a law. It is true The exercise of this power will not probably be so frequent nor resorted to on so many occasions in one case as in the other. But the recognition of the principle cannot fail to establish it more firmly. But because this recognition is made in the proposed Constitution, an exception is taken to the whole of it. For we are told it is a, For we are told that it is a violation of the present Confederation, a confederation of sovereign states. I shall not enter into an investigation of the present Confederation, but I shall remark that it is that its principle is not the principle of free governments. The people of the United States are not, as such, represented in the present Congress and considered even as the component parts of the several states. They are not represented in proportion to their numbers and importance. And what he was talking about is the Confederacy, or I should say the Continental Congress, was not a representation of the people. That those people were being delegated, or actually they were being appointed by the state legislatures. And so if you look at the new system, he was basically pointing out that this new federal government or general government would have representatives both for the people as well as for the state legislature. So both sovereigns would be represented in the bicameral Congress. Mr. Wilson, later on, makes this comment, and this is another argument that he throws out, and it kind of goes back to the same old comments he's been making. It is urged as a general objection to this system that the powers of Congress are unlimited and undefined, and that they will be the judges in all cases of what is necessary and proper for them to do. Close quote. And he actually quoted that, the powers of Congress unlimited. And so anyway, to bring this subject to your view, I need do no more than point to the words in the Constitution, beginning at the 8th section, Article 1, the first article, the Congress, it says, shall have power, etc. I need not read the other words, but I leave it to every gentleman to say whether the powers were not as accurately and minutely defined as can be done on the same subject, in the same language. The old Constitution is as strongly marked on this subject, and even concluding clause with which so much fault has been found gives no more than other powers, nor does it in any degree go beyond the particular enumeration. For when it is said that Congress shall have power to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper, those words are limited and denned by the following: for carrying into execution the foregoing powers. So here is another case, Massachusetts, now Pennsylvania, they're talking about the necessary and proper clause. And how many people said, well, that gives the federal government unlimited power. And he's saying, no, it's only allowing them to do whatever is necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers. It is saying no more than that. The powers we have already particularly given shall be effectually carried into execution. And so here he's clearly stating that the powers are enumerated, and the only thing that the federal government can do is exercise those powers by whatever they believe is necessary and proper, and that is it. Which is why the State Department, in maintaining and manning the control and the flow of people between the United States and other foreign entities, has come up with the necessary and proper mechanism of controlling those people by issuing passports. It doesn't say passports are legal, but it does give them the authority to control the flow of people, immigrations, and so forth. Therefore, the State Department was the keeper and the producers of these kinds of documents in controlling U.S. citizens from, you know, just being able to, you know, come and go and keeping track of whether you're a citizen or not. Okay, so I've got less than a minute. So this next one, is, he's going to talk about two types of governments, and he's going to basically talk about probably, and I'm looking at this, he's probably going to go through the general powers and enumerated powers, those two types of governments, that you have a government that has been reined in by measures and controls, and then you have a government that has, you know, general powers and can do anything and everything that they want to do. Clearly, you've heard me say this over and over again. We have an enumerated government. We do not have a general government. They cannot just do what they want to do. And so with these, with this heartbreak, we're going to go into these two promos, and we'll be back with more Pennsylvania debates with Mr. Wilson. So please stay tuned, and we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Now, this is a common thread because Mr. Iredell in North Carolina uses a very similar, but he uses a metaphor of a, or the imagery of a power of attorney, the general power of attorney and a specified power of attorney. And in this particular case, Mr. Wilson in Pennsylvania debates goes down the path of the two kinds of government. And so, and he gets into this. And so this is how these two kind of connect for you. There are two kinds of government. That where general power is intended to be given to the legislature. And that where the powers are particularly enumerated. In the last case, the implied result is that nothing more is intended to be given than what is so enumerated, unless it results from the nature of government itself. And let's just say technology comes along and they now have this ability to, you know, keep a database where they needed to create some type of tracking for the states or some type of tracking for the people or what have you in an enumerated power. And I'm just throwing this out here. so that people can understand what he was just saying, because the nature of government does change and evolve as technologies, capabilities, and so forth, you know, bring forth new forms of data management, ephemeral type of data, whether that be, you know, like I said, ephemeral or even permanent data and so forth. Anyway, on the other hand, when general legislative powers are given, then the people part with their authority and, on the gentleman's principle of government, retain nothing. But in a government like the proposed one, this new constitution, there can be no necessity for a Bill of Rights, for, on my principle, the people never part with their power. Enumerate all the rights of men. I am sure, sir, that no gentleman in the late convention would have attempted such a thing. I believe the honorable speakers in opposition on this floor were members of the assembly, which appointed delegates to that convention. If it had been their thought proper to have sent them into that body, how luminous would the dark conclave have been? Bottom line, and I'm just going to kind of summarize on this, the whole point here is that you cannot literally dictate or identify every right that you need to protect. That's why they didn't mess with the Bill of Rights. That's why they felt it was folly to go down that path. Going on, Mr. Wilson says, even in a single government, if the powers of the people rest on the same establishment as is expressed in this Constitution, a Bill of Rights is by no means a necessary measure. In a government possessed of enumerated powers, such a measure would be not only unnecessary, but preposterous and dangerous. Whence comes this notion that in the United States there is no security without a Bill of Rights? Have the citizens of South Carolina no security for their liberties? They have no Bill of Rights. Are their citizens on the eastern side of the Delaware less free or less secured in their liberties than those on the western side? The state of New Jersey has no Bill of Rights. The state of New York has no Bill of Rights. The states of Connecticut, Rhode Island have no Bill of Rights. I know not whether I have exactly enumerated the states who have no Bill of Rights, as he thought. It is necessary to add a Bill of Rights to their constitutions, but this enumeration, sir, will serve to show by, and he's just saying, whenever he says enumerations, he's just talking about listing. And he says, so this listing of states that have no Bill of Rights is not essential or necessary measure, but in a government consenting of enumerated powers, such as is proposed by the United States, a Bill of Rights would not only be unnecessary, but in my humble judgment, highly imprudent. In all societies, there are many powers and rights which cannot be particularly enumerated. A Bill of Rights annexed to a constitution is an enumeration of the powers reserved. If an attempt, an enumeration, everything that is not enumerated presumed to be given. And this is what he's saying. He's saying that if you go down this path of listing in the Bill of Rights, this, you know, these protections, such as privacy, there is no protection of privacy. There is a right of unreasonable search and seizure by government of your house and property, but that doesn't mean that when you step out into commerce or what have you, you have a right of privacy. It is very specific. And so when they went down these paths of trying to create these very specific protections, anything that they left out did not necessarily mean that it wasn't protected. That would have been folly. And so the Bill of Rights was a huge mistake in the very beginning. And the reason being is because if it's not enumerated, if there's nothing for religion enumerated in the Constitution, then the federal government cannot say that they have these powers over church, that they can, you know, dictate laws that you can't pray. They can't. And as a matter of fact, the First Amendment actually keeps them from doing that. But let me move on with what Mr. Wilson says. The consequences is that an imperfected enumeration, in other words, an incomplete list of protections, would throw all implied power into the scale of government, and the rights of the people would be rendered incomplete. But the other hand, an imperfect enumeration of the powers of government reserves all implied powers to the people, and by that means, the Constitution becomes incomplete. Is it better to have an incomplete Constitution than an unprotected sovereignty and powers of the people? And you're far better off having an incomplete Constitution than risking not having the protections for the people. But of the two, it is much safer to run the risk, and this is what he's saying, but of the two, it is much safer to run the risk on the side of the Constitution. For an omission in an enumeration of powers of government is neither so dangerous nor important as an omission in the enumeration of the rights of the people. And that's what basically what I was just saying, but I should have read further instead of just jumping in there. Anyway, I'm hoping that this is actually starting to make sense, because I have been of the mind that the Bill of Rights has done more harm than good, because most people became complacent in thinking, oh, well, we're protected. We don't need to worry about government anymore. We've got the Bill of Rights. We have our rights protected. And no, because how did we get the Department of Interior? How did we get the Department of Labor? How did we get the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Energy? Clearly, those are not enumerated powers. Those are powers that should be left to the states. The same thing with healthcare. The same thing with education. I go on and on and on. Over 80% of what the federal government is doing is outside the boundaries of the Constitution. And that is why it is so important to understand that they can only legally do those things that have been enumerated to them. The whole point was that the Constitution be inadequate, then you have to amend it. And as Madison stated in the veto of the bonus bill in 1817, he clearly stated that you cannot make this connection to the necessary and proper, the Supremacy Clause, the General Welfare and Defense Clause, as well as the Commerce Clause. Those clauses only pertain to the enumerated powers. You cannot make a connection to anything that's not enumerated and then say, okay, we're good because it's necessary and proper. These are usurpations, and that's what the federal government has been doing for the past two centuries. So Mr. McKean now addresses the convention in Pennsylvania, and this is what he says. And in declaring that this Constitution and the laws of the United States, which have been made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. Now, I want to be clear here, because this is the Supremacy Clause in Article 6. Want to be very clear here on that treaty part, when he says that a treaty made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, that is a very specific thing. That means two-thirds of the Senate have to approve of that treaty. Do you know how many treaties that have been passed that have not been passed by two-thirds of the Senate? That the treaties with most Indian tribes were done outside of that process? Or a lot of the treaties that have been done in, Alaska and so forth, outside of that process? We have a lot of treaties that are not in pursuance with the Constitution, which are therefore illegal and illegitimate treaties. And he goes on, Mr. McKean goes on and says, this has at last been conceded that though it is not explicit enough, yet it gives to Congress no further powers than those already enumerated. In other words, when you read the Supremacy Clause, and his point here is that there is no power granted. It just says that laws, that this Constitution and laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof. In other words, in accordance and in harmony with this. In other words, those laws that are within the enumerated powers that they are in concert with those laws are the only laws that are supreme. They can't just create an act of the civil rights and make that a law or constitutional. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
And so Mr. McCain, in his first statement that I'm going to be mentioning, he gets into the Supremacy Clause. And so I'm going to start this all over again. And he says, and in declaring that this Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. In other words, they cannot just create any law willy-nilly. It has to be in pursuance. It has to be based upon only those powers that are vested in them. They just can't come along and say, hey, we're granting you new rights. They can't come along and say, we're going to grant you an entitlement to welfare or health care or anything like that. We're going to control energy. We're going to control. No, if it is not an enumerated power, in other words, it's not in pursuance, it's not harmonious, it's not in congruence to the Constitution, then they cannot create those laws. Those laws are not supreme. They are null and void. And so he moves on and says that this has at last been conceded, that though it is explicit enough, yet it gives to Congress no further powers than those already enumerated. That those that first said it gave Congress the powers of superseding the state governments cannot persist in it, for no person can, with a tolerable face, read the clauses over and infer that such may be the consequence. And what he's saying is, nowhere in here does it say that they can do anything and everything to make themselves more powerful than the states or take away the states' powers. They can only do those things that are enumerated in the Constitution. Mr. Wilson comes back and says, there are two kinds of government where the general government is intended to be given legislature. Oh, actually, you know what? I have already read this. I apologize. He comes back and says this. In the second place, we are told that there is no check upon the government but the people. It is unfortunate, sir, that if their superintending authority is allowed as a check, but I apprehend that in the very construction of this government, there are numerous checks besides those expressly enumerated. The two branches of the legislature are mutual checks upon each other. We've talked about that. But that's why we have bicameral legislation, except in Nebraska. Nebraska should be ashamed of itself, that it has no checks on its people as well as its state needs. But this subject, and I'm going back on this, he goes here, but this subject will be more properly discussed when we come to consider the form of government itself, the very manner introducing this Constitution by the recognition of the authority of the people is said to change the principle of the present Confederation and to introduce a consolidating and absorbing government. In this confederated republic, the sovereignty of the states, it is said, is not preserved. We are told that there cannot be two sovereign powers and that the subordinate sovereignty is no sovereignty. Now, here's another point in time where they're talking about two separate sovereignties. It will be worthwhile, Mr. President, to consider this objection at large. When I had the honor of speaking formally on the subject, I stated in a concise a manner as possible the leading ideas that occurred to me to ascertain where the supreme and sovereign power resides. It has not been, nor I presume will not be denied, that someone there is, of a necessity, must be a supreme, absolute, and uncontrollable authority. I believe that this may justly be termed the sovereign power, for, from that gentleman, Mr. Finley's account of the matter, it cannot be sovereign unless it is supreme. For, says he, a subordinate sovereignty is no sovereignty at all. I had the honor of observing that if the question was asked where the supreme power resides, I stated further that if the question was asked to some politician who had not considered the subject with sufficiency, accuracy, where the power resided in our governments, he would answer that it was vested in the state constitutions. This opinion approaches near the truth, but it does not reach it, for the truth is that the supreme and absolute uncontrollable authority remains with the people. I mentioned also that the practical recognition of this truth was reserved for the honor of this country. I recollect no constitution founded on this principle, but we have witnessed the improvement and enjoy the happiness of seeing it carried into practice. The great penetrating mind of Locke seems to be the only one that pointed towards even the theory of this great truth. When I made the observation that the politicians would say the supreme power was lodged in our state constitutions, I did not suspect that the honorable gentleman from Westmoreland, Mr. Finley, was included in that description, but I find myself disappointed, for I imagined his opposition would have arisen from another consideration. His position is that the supreme power resides in the states as governments, and mine is it resides in the states as the people, as the fountains of government. That the people meant not, and that the people ought not to part with it to any government whatsoever in their hands, it remains secure. They can delegate it in as much proportion to such bodies on such terms and under such limitations as they think proper. I agree with the members in opposition that there cannot be two sovereigns at the same on the same object. And that's one of the reasons why we look at this Republican form of government and precisely how the states even have a check on the federal government. It's built in by giving the federal government only enumerated powers. And that's why the states, every time it comes to energy, labor, education, these other matters,
That is why the states need to stand up, put their foot down, and say, no, this is our authority. You have no business in this, and you can't be taxing us and throwing money at us and trying to say, well, we can help you this way. That is unconscionable. Mr. Wilson goes on and says, but it is not pretended that the line is drawn with such precision. The inaccuracy of language must, to a certain degree, prevent the accomplishment of such a desire. Whoever views the matter in a true light will see the powers are as minutely enumerated and defined as was possible, and will also discover that the general clause against which so much exception is taken is nothing more than what was necessary to render effectual the particular powers that are granted. And so, let me see, we got enough time to get this next one in. Mr. Wilson continues on and he says, I hope, sir, that there will not be the enemies of each other or resemble comets in conflicting orbits, mutually operating destruction, but that their motion will be better represented by that of the planetary system, which each part moves harmoniously with its proper sphere, and no injury arises by interference or opposition. Every part, I trust, will be considered as a part of the United States. Can any cause of distrust arise here? Is there any increase of risk? Or rather, are not the enumerated powers as well denned as in the present Articles of Confederation? And so, yes, of course so. And Mr. McKean then steps in and says this, the framers of this Constitution wisely divided the legislative departments into two houses, subject on the qualified negative of the President of the United States, though this government embraces only enumerated powers. In other words, not a king who can dictate powers for himself. In a single state, annual elections may be proper, the more so, when the legislative powers extend to all cases, but in such an extent of country as the United States, and when the powers are circumscribed, there is not that necessity, nor are the objects of the general government of that nature as to be acquired immediately by every capacity. Now, I'm going to leave it there because I'm under a minute and I don't want to go into these next comments for Pennsylvania. But I want to say this, that these debates are critical. These debates are our national treasure. There is probably nothing more critical and nothing more important than what these men were saying, because these men were clarifying the limits and the terms of our very Constitution. These men were literally putting down onto paper the confinement and the tight constraints that were delegated to them, that they could not just do anything that they wanted to do. They were bound by the enumerated powers. There was a process inserted so that if it was deemed necessary and proper, that the states would consider an amendment to this Constitution in fixing whatever the deficiencies were, so that the federal government could then constitutionally exercise the necessary proper powers. It's pretty clear, folks, they are doing so many things that are outside the boundaries of the Constitution. That's why I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities,
responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty.